You're listening to Idaho Matters. I'm Gemma Gaudet. The state of Idaho is facing a lawsuit over its continued enforcement of a law deemed unconstitutional nearly 20 years ago. Now, the law in question has deep roots here and all across the country. The ACLU of Idaho filed the suit last year on behalf of two men convicted under the law, or one similar to it in another state, who want to scrub it from state code entirely. In the first story of a two-part series, Boise State Public Radio reporter James Dawson traces the long history of these so-called crimes against nature laws. And I do want to give you a quick warning. This story does cover sexual topics. So if you want to turn off for a minute, do so. And this story will finish up in just about 5 minutes.
As of December, 41 people were forced to register as a sex offender in Idaho for violating the state's crime against nature law. That means they're restricted on where they can live, what jobs they can hold, and all their information is available for the public to see. Idaho's law criminalizes anal and oral sex, historically including consensual sex, since even before the state's founding. From its first days as a territory, legislators in Lewiston in 1863 and 1864 adopted the area's first set of criminal laws, including an infamous crimes against nature statute. Penalties included at least 5 years in prison, up to life.
They were basing it largely off of the common law, and that was an English transport. And by common law, what we mean is judge-made law.
That's Sam Newton, a law professor and historian at University of Idaho College of Law. Charles Altwater, who had been in and out of the state penitentiary in Boise for various crimes, was among the first men who challenged the statute. He'd been imprisoned on a sodomy conviction in Shoshone County in 1915, but he argued he'd only engaged in oral sex, which wasn't specifically defined in Idaho code or typically included under the traditional definition of sodomy. The state Supreme Court ruled against Altwater unanimously in a scathing decision, calling it, quote, one of the most heinous and unspeakable forms of crime. Here's Newton reading more from that opinion.
We feel disposed to follow the more modern decisions, which we think are better reasoned and in keeping with the progress of civilization.
The origin of these American laws starts nearly 500 years ago, when the Reformation Parliament under English King Henry VIII passed the Buggery Act of 1533. It made anal sex and bestiality punishable by death, which later inspired similar laws as the American colonies began taking shape. These laws eventually were used to punish the LGBTQ community, but they weren't originally designed that way. It was to prevent sex outside of marriage. That's according to William Eskridge, a Yale law professor whose book, Dishonorable Passions, chronicles the history of American sodomy laws.
That's what sodomy laws were all about. The religious and secular idea that if you wanted to have sexual pleasure, it had to be conjugality within a traditional marriage.
According to Eskridge, relatively few people were actually prosecuted under these laws if the sex was consensual, because there were generally no other witnesses.
They were of the same genre as anti-fornication laws.
They were mostly used as secondary laws to prosecute child molesters and rapists. After the colonies won their independence from Great Britain and began shaping their own societies, nearly all of them revoked the death penalty for sodomy until the early 19th century, according to Eskridge. Again, enforcement during this time wasn't very common. But Eskridge says all of that started to change as attitudes shifted towards condemning consenting gay adults.
After the 1890s, you know, it starts becoming inverts, later homosexuals, degenerates. And they start being reported that way.
After Charles Altwater, the Idaho man who lost his appeal in 1916, further cases of people being convicted under Idaho's sodomy law continued. Then in the 50s came the Boys of Boise scandal that convicted some men of consensual sex with adults alongside those convicted of sexually assaulting teenagers. The incident alone and its fallout deserves its own story. But the scandal didn't happen in a vacuum. The 1950s saw the persecution of the LGBTQ community in the U.S. kick into high gear as the Cold War iced over the country. The federal government, whipped into a frenzy by Wisconsin Senator Joseph McCarthy and others, demanded agencies purge and blackball those even accused of being gay, along with rooting out communists. McCarthy loyalists, including Idaho Senator Herman Welker, threatened to use the arrest of Wyoming Senator Lester Hunt's son for soliciting an undercover male officer against him. Hunt later committed suicide in his office in 1954. Former Wyoming Senator Alan Simpson, who eventually occupied Hunt's seat, blasted the threats in the Yahoo News documentary, Uniquely Nasty, The U.S. Government's War on Gays.
It's just a couple of sons of bitches doing evil things like out of Macbeth.
But there was a glimmer of hope for this bleak period in the lives of the LGBTQ community, even though it would take nearly another 50 years before it would come to pass.
And in the second installment of our two-part series, our James Dawson reports how society eventually softened its views on these laws, that their effects still ripple throughout parts of the country today.
Persecution of the LGBTQ community was raging in the mid-20th century as the federal government was purging its workforce and anti-gay movements swept across the country.
One never knows when the homosexual is about. He may appear normal, and it may be too late when you discover he is mentally ill.
The Boys of Boise scandal in the 50s resulted in charges brought against 16 men, some of them for having consensual sex with adults, though others sexually abused teenage boys. All but one were convicted, with some sent to prison and others receiving probation. But around that time, some in the legal community began a push to decriminalize consensual anal sex between adults at the state level as part of a movement to standardize criminal laws across the country. The U.S. has a patchwork of laws that differs state to state. University of Idaho law professor Sam Newton says this is partially due to state lawmakers trying to react to high-profile cases flagged for them by constituents.
The model penal code is a response to that kind of overreaction to say maybe we should standardize the criminal law and, you know, really fix a lot of problems that are happening.
Idaho was one of the first states to join the model penal code movement in the early 70s. But after lawmakers found out they had repealed so-called morality laws, with pressure from religious groups, they immediately reinstated them, while other states decriminalized them. All of this ultimately led to the 1986 U.S. Supreme Court case Bowers v. Hardwick out of Georgia. In a 5-4 decision, the court said gay people had no fundamental constitutional right to engage in sodomy. The reasoning by the majority was because it didn't want to wade into, quote, judge-made law that's not specifically spelled out in the Constitution. It would take nearly two more decades for another case like this to reach the U.S. Supreme Court.
This was one of the important cases of our lifetime to challenge the state's power to criminalize the lives of lesbians and gay men.
Suzanne Goldberg was sitting in her office at the LGBTQ law organization Lambda Legal when she got a call from a colleague in Houston telling her the news. Two men had been charged for having consensual sex under Texas law. Would she be willing to help?
Of course, we said yes.
Goldberg, who now teaches at Columbia Law School, says she saw an opening. She says attitudes had changed since the Bowers decision in the 80s. It led to more gay rights protests and people coming out of the closet to friends and family.
All of that helped America and members of the court see gay people as neighbors, as human beings with full dignity.
Eventually, the Supreme Court took up her case, Lawrence versus Texas. In a 6-3 decision in 2003, Justice Anthony Kennedy would rebuke the court's previous decision that allowed such bans on sex between consenting adults.
Their penalties and purposes, though, have more far-reaching consequences, touching upon the most private human conduct, sexual behavior, and in the most private of places, the home.
In his dissent, Justice Antonin Scalia remarked on the direction the court was taking, toward what he viewed as a path of illegitimacy in the eyes of the public that the majority in the Bowers decision feared.
It is clear from this that the court has taken sides in the culture war, and in particular in that battle of the culture war that concerns whether there should be any moral opprobrium attached to homosexual conduct.
That archival audio thanks to the Oye Project. LGBTQ rights groups hailed the new Lawrence decision as a significant step towards the legal acceptance of gay people across the country, something they would build on for years to come. But now, almost 20 years removed from the case, there are still 14 states that have consensual sodomy laws on the books, including Idaho. Some have argued it's a useful tool in sexual assault or rape cases, which can be difficult to prove at trial, or they can be used in a way to prosecute crimes against minors. Goldberg says she understands those arguments.
But we live in a system of laws, and we live in a system of equal justice. And we cannot have a set of laws that says, well, we're going to prosecute some people for consensual sex, but not others.
In some ways, Idaho is still enforcing it. As of December, 41 people are on the state's sex offender registry for committing these crimes either here or out of state. It's a lifetime requirement that limits where they can live and what jobs they can hold, though it's possible for some to petition a judge to expunge their record after 10 years. The ACLU of Idaho has sued the state and federal court on behalf of an anonymous man, as well as Randall Mengus. He was convicted in 1994 for having oral sex with two 16-year-olds shortly after he turned 18, something that would not meet the definition of statutory rape today. One of the boys in Mengus said the sex was consensual, according to police reports at the time. In a motion to dismiss the lawsuit, the state attorney general's office said the Supreme Court's opinion does not bar these kinds of laws when it involves minors or if there's a lack of consent. The case remains ongoing. James Dawson, Boise State Public Radio News.
And for more of Jimmy's reporting, go to our website, boisestatepublicradio.org. More Idaho Matters, next.